B-Pod Studios.
Sports Hub.
Gasper and Murray have scorching hot takes. Twisting your mind with Pat Celtics and Bays. They'll also talk socks and out-of-town things. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
All right, it is Gasper and Murray on the Saturday final hour. Tim McCone in for Jim Murray at Talking Patriots. And the big news from the NFL last night, Antonio Brown back in the NFL. He reaches agreement on a one-year contract with his former quarterback, Tom Brady, and the Bucks. Chris, not a fan of this move, correct?
I'm not. I don't think it's really necessary. The only way I really like it is if you're blocking your competition, the Seahawks, from getting Antonio Brown. But I just feel like you're trying to reform the culture of a franchise that is known for losing, that is known.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
What's up?
Gasper and Murray have scorching hot takes. Twisting your mind with Pat Celtics and Bays. They'll also talk socks and out-of-town things. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
All right, it is Gasper and Murray on the Saturday final hour. Tim McCone in for Jim Murray at Talking Patriots. And the big news from the NFL last night, Antonio Brown back in the NFL. He reaches agreement on a one-year contract with his former quarterback, Tom Brady, and the Bucks. Chris, not a fan of this move, correct?
I'm not. I don't think it's really necessary. The only way I really like it is if you're blocking your competition, the Seahawks, from getting Antonio Brown. But I just feel like you're trying to reform the culture of a franchise that is known for losing, that is known for not being reliable, that is known for shooting itself in the foot. And those are all characteristics that Antonio Brown brings to the table. And I also think there's the human factor of, you know, too many mouths to feed. Maybe Chris Godwin blows out his hamstring and it's not a problem, but that guy's looking to get paid. He's already missed games and he needs to put up numbers, and he's going to come back into the offense and suddenly they're going to be force feeding the ball to Antonio Brown instead of him. And you also have the coach there who has a history with Antonio Brown. You know, we played the clip earlier, McCone, of Bruce Arians saying on the Tiki and Tierney show that back in March that Antonio Brown would not be a Buck. And you know what stood out the most to me from that? At one point when the hosts are pressing him on how he could rule it out, he says, "I know him."
Yeah. Yeah,
I know him. I mean, that's pretty damning.
It is. It is. Again, he probably should have checked with Brady before making those making those comments on that radio show, because Tom certainly had different feelings and Tom won out when it came to that decision. All of the things you pointed out, 100% valid. And maybe I'm just a sucker for like the sexy move in the NFL. I don't think I am. I know I am. I just think the upside of bringing him in for the Bucks is, I mean, I think now you look at it, and if it plays out, and that's a big if, because again, he's torpedoed the last three teams he's been on and really only lasted what? I mean, his one game stretch with the Patriots, that's one more game played than he did it even with the Raiders.
That's a great point.
I think that they're suddenly the favorites in the NFC if Antonio Brown stays on the field. You got three of the top 15 receivers in the NFL. I guess the big question is the fact he hasn't played in 18 months, but I think it's worth a shot. And Brady certainly has his influence over that team now in a way that he didn't here in New England. There's no question about that, because to your point, the head coach clearly did not want Antonio Brown there. Brady did, and guess what? Antonio Brown is a Tampa Bay Buck. 617-779-0985. Let's go talk to Justin in the car. Justin, what's up?
Hey, guys. So real quick about the Pats. I feel like what's not being talked about enough is the fact that, you know, two out of their three losses are to, you know, the Chiefs, who are obviously a great team, the Seahawks, who I think are, you know, the best team in football right now. And I understand the Broncos are kind of a bunch of bums, but at the same time, you know, they took essentially 2 weeks off practice because of what was going on with COVID there. That's huge when you're transitioning the way that this team is. Also, one last thing about Antonio Brown. That dude's a lunatic. He's probably going to last like a month over in Tampa. I hope he doesn't, because he's a lot of fun to watch, but he is he's a deranged cat. Have a great day, guys.
So I just want to hit on the practice thing, because I have to be honest, this has bothered me. You know, all week, and we talked about it a little bit earlier. I don't doubt for a second that the Patriots were hurt by not having practice time, by having basically 1.5 practices in the weeks leading up to. But I just want to, you know, sort of check people out there. Because before the game started, Tim, the storyline was the delay in the game was an advantage for the Patriots because it created time for Stephon Gilmore and Cam Newton to play and clear the COVID protocols. That's what we were talking about.
Yeah.
Those guys would not have been able to play. You would have had to put Jarrett Stidham or Brian Hoyer out there, or you wouldn't have had Gilmore at corner. So suddenly it was advantage Patriots. Now they lose the game. Belichick, unsolicited, after a game in which he's not watched the film, which after every loss, and I've covered the team, you know, full time since 06 and even before that a little in 04 and 05, and I can tell you it's pretty clear. Patriots win. Bill could tell you every block that was made on a kickoff return that was a touchdown. Patriots lose. He says he has to look at the film. He can't even remember his own kids' names.
Yeah.
I have to, you know, what are your son's names? I don't know. I have to look at the film. So unsolicited, he brings up this practice thing, and now everybody's just eating it up. What happened to the idea that the time off was an advantage because you got Cam Newton and Stephon Gilmore, your two best players, back? What happened to that? Look, the practice thing hurt them, but it's not an excuse for the loss. And the Tennessee Titans didn't have a lot of practice time either. Now, granted, they took
legal
some,
practice time.
Granted, they took some fake practice time, you know, with Ryan. But they didn't have a ton of practice time either. And they came out and they beat the Buffalo Bills and they beat the Texans. So it wasn't a huge factor. You know why it's a factor for this team, as big a factor as Belichick's trying to make it out to be? Because they have a talent deficit on offense. And the way to be able to counter that or to be able to account for that is with excellent coaching. And that's fine. But you have to acknowledge the first part. The coach is also responsible. He can fix the second part. The second part is him fixing it, but he's responsible for the first part, which is the lack of talent on offense. So enough with the practice.
It is crazy. I also go back to, in terms of the lack of talent, you know, go back to first round picks by the Patriots. And, you know, we always used to say that he always hits on those first round picks.
Yeah.
And really, the start of the dynasty was unbelievable.
Totally.
And really, I think the biggest miss was probably what, Maroney maybe in the first round.
Yeah.
Merriweather, even though he made three Pro Bowls, but generally you were getting impact guys. And you look at Sony Michel and N'Keal Harry. Look, Sony obviously had a big postseason in 18, but to not get anything out of those two first round picks that you invested on the offensive side of the ball, I mean, yeah, that's going to show up and it's going to hurt you. And clearly this year it has so far.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, the drafting is like a whole conversation for another day in terms of going into it, but there's nobody better in sports at getting the most out of their talent than Bill Belichick. But I also feel like sometimes there's a degree of difficulty created. Like, I feel like we give him like double credit and no blame. Should you get credit for overcoming and creating adversity? I'm overcoming adversity that you created is what I'm trying
to
say.
You're solving your own problem.
You're solving your own problem that you created for yourself. So should I give you like double credit there? It doesn't make sense. That's the only thing I've said. I think the practice thing matters to them because their margin for error on offense is so small. But the margin for error on offense is so small because of some of the stuff you're talking about, because of the drafting, because of the difficulty procuring wide receivers. And I think you can't sort of overlook that and just say, oh, the Patriots are in a horrible spot. Oh, the league, you know, screw the Patriots. And I think Bill deserves credit for doing the right thing from a health and safety standpoint by not having guys come in and practice, by, you know, canceling some practices, by having guys come in and shifts. A lot of that was Bill Belichick, not the NFL. I think he did an awesome job managing COVID and trying to keep his players safe. And he deserves a lot of credit for that. But at the same time, I think we have to look a little more skeptically at the root of all evil for the Patriots and all these issues is that they didn't have practice time. And that's why they lost to an inferior football team in the Denver Broncos. I mean, how bad was Drew Lock? Like, Drew Lock literally tried to throw that game away at the end.
No, and that's just one of those situations, too, when I said that Brady absolutely wins that game, because we've seen it time and time again. And even that was an extreme version of it, where these teams just gift wrap you these games. Yeah, and Drew Lock tried his absolute best. I mean, that interception, the second one, you're like, what are you guys doing? What is going on here? It was unbelievable. Unbelievable. 617-779-0985. Quickly, before I get back to the calls, Chris, do you like the Pats tomorrow?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah?
I mean, practice.
Yeah.
They've had a week. No. In all seriousness, I do, because I think Bill's really good when he has inside knowledge of a player.
Yeah.
And he has inside knowledge of Garoppolo. I think the 49ers are pretty banged up offensively, a little bit on the offensive line, and they're down at, like, running back. I mean, no Mostert. Tevin Coleman's on IR. Yeah. Even the guy they're going to play, I think it's Jeff Wilson, has been on the injury report all week with a calf injury. They called up Jamichael Hasty from the practice squad. This will be the ultimate test. I used to always say when Shanahan's dad was in Denver and guys like Olandis Gary were running.
Just plug and play.
I used to say,
Anderson,
like, you could
right?
plug my grandmother in there and she could run for 1,000 yards. That's really going to be tested, I think, tomorrow for San Francisco. So I like the Pats. I think it's a good spot for the Pats.
All right, here we go. 617-779-0985. Sneaking a couple of calls here before the break, and we'll go to Derek. Derek, what's up?
Hey, what's happening, guys? Thanks for having the call.
Yep.
Hey, I just wanted to mention a couple of things. It might be a little premature to throw out there because Bill has been a great coach for 20 years. I mean, you can't ask for much more. But I don't want to throw too much at you, but you think about it. With what happened with Brady, I mean, you lose the greatest quarterback of all time for your team. That doesn't look good for the coach, especially between their relationship together. And then you also have one of the best tight ends of all time who says football isn't fun anymore. And once his quarterback goes to another team, he decides it's fun again. So it kind of puts an asterisk on Bill Belichick's legacy once he retires, because you know what? He has the success. He has the ring. But, I mean, you look at what happened with this team in the past couple seasons, and you can't help but look and think, is Belichick the reason why this team is mediocre now? And I'll let you guys go off that topic. Thank you.
I mean, I don't think Bill's the reason that the team is, you know, mediocre. It was always going to be tough post-Brady, and in a perfect world, he would have had Garoppolo, and I think it would be smoother. I just think that the Patriots have won a certain way for so long because they had the greatest coach and the greatest quarterback. You know, they could get by with less at a lot of positions, and there were a lot of years I felt like the Patriots beat teams that had more talent than them, but they had Belichick and Brady, and the formula is a little bit different, and you don't have that margin for error, and I think everybody has to adjust to that. I think we as fans have to adjust to it. I think, you know, Bill sort of has to maybe recalibrate his roster building a little bit for what it's like when you don't have a quarterback who can just automatically cover up all these, you know, roster holes that have accumulated over time. But, you know, I don't look at it and say, you know, they're mediocre because of Bill, even though I think I can be critical of him at times. I just think we have to recalibrate everything, and so does the organization, for what life looks like when you don't have, walking into every season, the greatest coach-quarterback combination in the history of professional football.
You walk in knowing you're going to get 12 wins at worst and literally go to the Super Bowl every other year.
Yeah, because you have two geniuses.
Right, exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
Now you have one genius.
617-779-0985. Mike, Dan, Nick, I see you guys lined up. Going to get to your phone calls coming up here after the break. Keep this Patriots conversation rolling here on Gasper and Murray. It's Tim McCone in for Murray on this Saturday.
Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Sports Hub. You're listening to Gasper and Murray.
Fantastic chemistry.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, back here, 98.5, the Sports Hub, Gasper and Murray. Gasper is here. Murray's out. Tim McCone in for him. 617-779-0985. See you guys hanging on. Promise to get back to your phone calls. So let's do that. Let's go talk to Dan in Rhode Island. Dan.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
Chris, can I go after you for a minute?
Yeah, go ahead. What do you got?
All right. So you said read the Phil Perry piece yesterday, right?
Yes.
About Jimmy?
Yeah.
All right, so I read it, and I've done my homework, and I'm going to tell you it was the laziest piece of writing I've ever seen.
Oh, so you're actually going after Phil.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you're my go-to guy.
Okay.
I'm never going to convince you anything, but you told me to read it, so I have to go to somebody.
Okay. Go ahead.
All right, so real quick, let me spell it out. So last year he talked about how Jimmy was yards per attempt in 2019. It was like he was like, what was it, sixth worst in the league or something, sixth least? I think it was. So what he didn't tell you was, by the metrics I looked up this morning, a downfield pass, a long pass, is anything considered 16 yards or over, right? And now I'm going to couch this as well, that the 49ers had the second fewest attempts at 54, all right?
Okay.
Guess who had the best QB rating completion percentage in the league with that metric? Guess.
Jimmy Garoppolo. Got it.
It was okay. So don't say you can't throw the ball long. They just didn't do a lot of it because that's the way the offense is obviously designed.
So you've clearly done your homework, but let me ask you this. I guess the difference here would be the difference of opinion is what classifies a long pass. Like for me,
16 yards in the air is what they classified it as.
Okay, so personally, but when you say they, who's that?
Some pro football statistics that you can break down every guy.
Okay.
I don't know which one it was. I looked it up this morning.
Okay. So personally, I would call 16 yards, and we could talk to Dan Orlovsky or people who've played in the, or Chris Sims, and ask them. Personally, I would classify 16 yards as an intermediate throw.
Okay.
And I know that when Phil wrote his thing, he was talking about anything that traveled 20 yards or more in the air. So I think Garoppolo's excellent on short to intermediate throws. And I think if you start to bring in throws that are 16 yards, then I think we're talking about intermediate. That's his wheelhouse. Now,
and so is Tom Brady. He made a living doing the same thing.
I agree. And that's why I actually think Garoppolo would be very good for the Patriots system in terms of the dink and dunk, which they do very well and have with Brady. But in terms of throwing the ball down the field, I think, like, I'm much more inclined, not just because Phil wrote it, but to say that something that travels 20 yards in the air is a lot closer to being a long pass than something that travels 15 or 16.
All right, and as far as 2020, which he also got on.
Yeah.
All right, he's only played 3.5 games, okay? So forget the injury thing for a minute. But, okay, let's take out the Jets game. He wasn't supposed to be playing. He was still hurt. The only reason he was playing was Nick Mullins was so horribly bad the week before. And they were just trying to, they figured they could walk over the Dolphins. Obviously, Ryan Fitzpatrick lit them up.
Yeah.
Now, as far as last week goes, if you have Aaron Donald on the line, what's the best way to neutralize him?
Throw quick passes, no question.
Okay. You can't do that 20 yards down the field. Their whole game plan was to protect his ankle, which is still not 100%.
Sure.
And to throw the game plan they had to make Aaron Donald not effective. So, I mean, he comes out with these statistics. You take out the Jets game right now, okay?
Do you mean the Dolphins game?
I mean the Dolphins game, I'm sorry. You take out that game. Right now, he has 7 touchdowns, no picks, a QB rating of 120, and, you know, I mean, what else do I need? It's stats are for losers, but those are stats. He bases his article on stats, and those are really good stats. I'm sorry. You just can't take it away from the guy.
So what's your upshot on Jimmy G? Because we all agree stats can be bent. Your upshot on him is, what kind of quarterback is he? I would say he's sort of Jared Goff caliber, which is, you know, good, but not franchise elite. Do you feel like he's, you know, franchise elite? Where do you take the stats out of it? Where do you feel like he ranks?
That's on me. I let him go.
Oh,
that was my bad.
Sorry.
And that was, again, that was Jimmy Garoppolo on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. That
no, I mean, some valid points. I will just say this, and I appreciate the research he did. I mean, it is subjective. I've never heard anybody refer to a 16-yard pass as a deep pass.
Yeah.
Like, a 16-yard pass is an out. That's like a deep out. You know, you have to be able to throw across. I mean, we could have Zoe call up. Like, 16 yards, that's not a long pass.
Right. But you've also said, and you said it today, that you also think Garoppolo would be successful if he was in New England.
Oh, yeah, because he's, because to the caller's point, he's perfect for the dink and dunk.
Yeah.
And he's very good at that. He's a super quick release. He's accurate. You know, but I think, I mean, it's hard to, stats are tricky. I think we all agree with that. But I also would just say, and it's tough to say one play, but if we're going to say, well, take away the Miami game where he didn't play well, then I'm going to say, okay, you want to take away that. Then I'm going to say I'm basing my deep ball opinion of Jimmy Garoppolo on the wide open Emmanuel Sanders he missed in the Super Bowl as he compiled the lowest fourth quarter quarterback rating of any quarterback in the history of the Super Bowl.
617-779-0985, the telephone number. Let's talk to Mike. Mike, what's up?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
So I know everyone wants to go with Brady versus Belichick in this whole situation as far as trying to figure out who to blame on things. But I always go back to, in the end, it comes down to Robert Kraft. I feel like he completely misplayed the situation where he thought if he got rid of Jimmy G, that would make Tom happy, not realizing that that same offseason, Tom's going to come back and say, give me an extension, give me a raise. And he didn't run that by Bill first. So I think Kraft is the one who didn't look far enough out in order to see what was going on.
I mean, you could look at it that way, but I would also say, you know, Kraft had the juggling act of trying to keep these two guys happy. And I think there's a lot of people who look at it and sort of say, in a different situation, this would have blown up a lot earlier than it did.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
So, I mean, I think you can look at it that way, too. Like, for it to go on for 20 years, that's pretty good.
Especially considering, like you said, in 2016, if you've got a quarterback that he was willing to move on from after that, and you still make two other Super Bowls, win an additional one after that.
And it might have been. I've said might. I'm not saying it is. Might have been, too, if Malcolm Butler had played. It's really not about Malcolm Butler playing. It's just about, like, guys like Jordan Richards and Johnson Badamosi not being on the field. Like, it could be any other name. It could just be, like you could have pulled Raymond Claiborne out of the stands and put him out there instead of having one of those guys on the field, and you would have had a better chance of winning.
Needed one stop.
Yeah.
One stop. 617-779-0985. Let's clear off the board. Let's talk to Nick in Plymouth. Nick.
Hey, guys. I wanted to ask Gasper. I know last year you made fun of it. I remember you saying how Burkhead was due for his injury.
Yes.
And I keep thinking about that game after game. Like, why does McDaniels and Belichick trust this guy so much? They have Taylor, who looks really good as a rookie. They're finally getting Harris on track. I know he had an amazing game when White had his tragedy with his family. But why is he on the field so much? He's such an inconsistent player. He can't catch the ball. He doesn't block at all. And he's on the field yet. Like, how many snaps was he on the field last game? At least 50%, no?
I can look that up. Yeah, I mean, you know, the guy can be productive in spurts. He's just not a feature back. And I think there are times in the past where the Patriots have basically tried to feature him. I know he's had some big scores, you know, the AFC Championship game in Kansas City and all that. Durability has been an issue for him. And I do, my issue with Burkhead is just that I feel like he's not the long-term feature back for you. And you used a first-round pick on Michelle and a third-round pick on Harris. Don't you want to see if those guys can be that? And don't you need to figure that out? And the other part of it is, a lot of times, the way they use Michelle and Harris makes the offense more predictable, you know, because they won't throw to those guys because they want to throw to Burkhead. You end up in situations where it's like, oh, Harris or Michelle's on the field. Oh, they're going to run. Oh, you know, Burkhead's out there. Okay, they'll probably pass, but they might run. And he's a decent runner, but I don't think his upside as a runner ultimately is what, say, Harris's is. And I'll be the first to admit, I have come around 180 degrees on Harris in terms of when they made that pick at the time, I didn't like it.
Yeah.
Because I thought, you know, Sony Michel was coming off the great postseason and you just used a first round pick on a running back. They obviously knew something I did in terms of the lack of durability of Sony Michel and ability to stay on the field. So when you look at it with Burkhead, I've always said I don't know what the fascination with that guy is. So last game, he only played 32% of the snaps. That's not a lot. I'm just trying to see which running back had the highest percentage of snaps here. It should be James White. Just looking. Well, I can't see it right now. For whatever reason, it's not. No. Oh, here it is. James White. James White played 54% of the snaps. So that was, and Damian Harris played 12 snaps. Burkhead played 18.
And Harris was really that first drive, I feel like. Yeah. I think he had played, six snaps in that first drive alone.
And it was heavy dose of James White, which I don't have a problem with. I like James White. But yeah, I don't get the fascination with Burkhead. You know, I know he was really good against Vegas, and he's had some good games for them. And I think he's a nice, you know, we're talking about Antonio Brown and Tampa. And so I think he's a nice guy to have for depth.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't be building any long-term plans or any game plans around him. Certainly not at the expense of guys I've drafted in the first and third round.
I wonder how much more do you think we see a lot of Sony Michel moving forward, or do you think that chapter is almost closed at this point?
I don't know. I mean, we'll see what happens if he comes off IR.
A lot of that, I'm sure, has to do with Harris and the way that Harris plays here in the next few weeks too.
I think Harris certainly could supplant Michel as like the primary running back.
Yeah,
but it just bothers me that that's kind of how they use the running backs. It's like, oh, this guy's the running back. This guy's the pass catching running back. I just think that it's been an issue the last couple of years, and it simplifies it for the defense, and it makes you a little predictable.
617-779-0985 is the telephone number. One final segment. We'll get to some of your calls. Plus, we've got five questions with Chris Gasper that we will get to here as we wrap up this Saturday edition of Gasper and Murray.
Stay tuned for more Gasper and Murray on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
This is Gasper and Murray.
You will listen.
98.5, The Sports Hub.
Back here, 98.5 The Sports Hub. It's Gasper and Murray. Tim McCone in for Murray on this Saturday final segment. We have five questions here coming up. We're going heavy Halloween theme. I'm not creative, unlike Murray, so I'm going to steal all the questions that he probably has for you next week.
Okay.
But that's the way that we're going to go.
Are you coming up with the questions yourself, or is the normal author of the questions providing the questions?
It's solo right here.
It's just
so,
you?
Yeah, okay. You're taking the training wheels off of Jarrett Stidham, apparently. We're going to see how it goes.
So I just want to let you know, so you don't feel bad and you should not, you know, criticize yourself, that Murray doesn't come up with the questions.
Really?
He does not.
Interesting.
Nope, he doesn't come up with the questions.
All right.
Tracy Clemens comes up with the questions.
That makes sense. One of the more talented people here at 98.5.
That is correct.
617-779-0985. See you guys lined up. Quickly, though, before we get back to the calls, just wanted to circle back to baseball here quick, Chris. And just seeing Mookie Betts in a Dodgers uniform, likely leading them to a World Series here. I know a lot of fans are frustrated. I was frustrated by the move, too, to trade him prior to, and obviously COVID changed a lot of things. But
yeah.
My whole thing is, when you've got maybe the best player in all of baseball, dealing him away before the season for a package that didn't necessarily blow you away didn't make a ton of sense for me, because you're kind of giving up on the season before it even starts. Like, I feel like that trade specifically was probably there for you in the regular season if things went off the rails.
That's
too.
That's an interesting point.
But, yeah, I just think for a Red Sox fan, it's going to be difficult to see the best player in baseball again no longer wearing your uniform and leading his new team to a World Series.
Yeah, so the way I look at it is the fact that they did trade him, doesn't that tell you something about how much they had exhausted every avenue possible to try and keep him and were getting no indication from him that he wanted to stay? Because this is the thing for me, is I feel like, you know, for some people out there, unless Mookie puts out a digital billboard on the Southeast Expressway saying, "I don't want to play in Boston," they're like, "Well, he never said that." Yeah. Mookie never said, you know. I think Mookie made it pretty clear to the team he wasn't staying here long term, and I think that's why they dealt him. And there were a variety of factors there. And so I also look at it, McCone, and say, if Mookie really wanted to stay here, as some people sort of allege, couldn't he have gone to the team and said, "Hey, look, I think we can work this out. Let's just go into the season with me here. Please, please don't trade me to the Dodgers.
Yeah.
I don't want to go. I don't, you know, I feel like I could stay here and we can work this out." And I'm taking out the fact that Felger is saying he has a source that says they met Mookie's number, the Red Sox, and he said no. So I think that's kind of the thing that gets lost. And it's not so much a defense of the Red Sox, but it's just the reality of this idea. Like, I feel like people can't come to terms with the idea that a player might not want to play the rest of his career for the Red Sox or the rest of his career in Boston. I don't think that being here for him in this environment, in terms of the scrutiny that comes along with being the face of the Red Sox and some of maybe what you have to deal with as a highly paid, and he would have been the highest paid guy on the team. He would have been one of the highest paid guys in baseball. And having to do that as a highly paid, a high profile African-American athlete, I don't think that was particularly appealing to him.
Yeah.
And so I think that's part of it that people don't realize or don't recognize. And I don't know why. The other part is I'm a big believer, McCone, that in life, but also in sports, particularly, actions speak louder than words. And so, yes, he never came out and said, "Oh, I don't want to play here," because he's smarter than that. Why would you alienate a fan base that really likes you? But also the actions tell you everything you need to know about his long-term plan to stay here. He could have cut off this trade, and he didn't. And even his words, he did whose podcast did he do? Was it like CC Sabathia?
Yes.
He did a podcast with, and he said, "Yeah, like, it was a little jarring when I was traded." But he didn't say, like, "I didn't want to be traded," or "I was bummed out," or there was nothing there that was that indicated that his master plan all along was to stay with the Red Sox.
No, I think that's a good point. I also wonder how much David Price played into it as well in terms of him leaving.
Yeah,
and not necessarily just from, you know, Price taking the money from the Red Sox and coming here in a decision that I think maybe he ultimately regretted. And I don't think Price ever wanted to come to Boston. But when you get that kind of godfather offer that Price got, and, you know, you wind up winning a World Series and everything like that. But I think Price probably looks at it and is like, wasn't necessarily worth it.
Yeah,
and
wasn't necessarily for me.
Yeah, and I wonder if he had those conversations with Mookie as well. Well, look, the scrutiny of being the highest paid player in Boston, it's really not worth it.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that played into it.
I don't know if they had that specific conversation, but they definitely talked, and that it would make a lot of sense, I think, for them to have a conversation along those lines. I think that's a great point, McCone. You have to remember, both of those guys are from Tennessee. Mookie spent part of his early life actually in the same community that David Price is from. So, and there's a connection there. Those guys have a connection. So I think that definitely could have played a factor in it. And I know people like to rip the Red Sox. They like to rip Red Sox ownership, but I feel like they exhausted every possible avenue with Mookie Betts. And the reality is that Mookie Betts had earned the right in his career to choose where he wanted to play. And that choice at the end of the day wasn't Boston, you know, and I don't think it was just about the money. I really don't. Now, where COVID might have changed things is that he was willing to sign with the Dodgers before exploring free agency.
Yeah,
that's a possibility. Yeah. I'll be honest, I'm not really even sold on that.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe that was a possibility. But this idea that it had nothing to do with the franchise or the city You know, that Mookie just wanted to get to free agency. I'd also ask you this, McCone. How many guys that, quote unquote, just want to get to free agency, then just get to free agency and re-sign with their original team?
Yeah, generally it doesn't
work
out.
That's generally not the way it goes.
No.
So even if part of the plan was to sign with the Red Sox and it was like, no, I just want to see what's out there. Like, that doesn't really add up, because it's pretty rare for a guy to get to free agency, you know, these guys that want to explore the market, and then be like, well, I've explored the market, and you know what? I'm going to go back to my original team. That doesn't happen that often.
No, it really doesn't. Generally, like you said, when you reach free agency, it's probably over.
Yeah,
at that
deuces.
Point.
You're throwing up the deuces when you reach free agency. That's the way it goes.
It also makes a lot more sense just from what we know about this ownership group and kind of falling in love with those superstars and guys that kind of make those splash, like Mookie Betts. Like, if I generally think that this ownership group probably would want to hit that number, despite, you know, not necessarily maybe wanting to pay for past performance. I feel like Mookie's kind of an exception there as well. Certainly some work to do for the Boston Red Sox moving forward. Yeah. There's no question about that.
And I would say this is different from the trade. Like, the whole idea of, should they have traded him, which, and I, you know, it's tough. Like, on national television, you have Joe Buck and Ken Rosenthal, both of whom I respect a lot, but basically being like, why would you ever trade this guy?
Yeah.
You know, I feel like they didn't really have a choice. I think what's separate is, did they get enough?
Yeah.
And I feel like they didn't. I think, you know, daddy Andrew Friedman took his son to the cleaners. And Chaim Bloom. And that's not to say I don't like Verdugo or Jeter Downs and those guys, but just look at the original formatting of the deal. It was to have a starting pitcher in it who was Gratterall.
Right.
And the Red Sox only backed off Gratterall when the medicals came back and they were like, oh, we don't think this guy can be a starter. They weren't like, oh, this guy's terrible. They were saying his stuff's really good, but oh, he's going to be a reliever?
Yeah.
Like, we were hoping to get a starter back. And then they never got a starter back in the deal. So that's where I think you can look at the deal and be like, oh, they didn't make a good deal. But that's separate from, why did they trade this guy? Should they have traded him? I think their hands were tied at the end of the day. They didn't have a choice. Much better to make a trade, even one that might not be the greatest, than to just let him walk away for a comp pick at the end of the year.
Luckily, I mean, the Sox have enough pitching in their system right now. Well, they'll be fine. No problems. No problems there. 617-779-0985. Let's sneak in a couple calls here before we finish up with five questions. Let's talk to Howard and Randolph. Howard, what's going on?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good, good.
Good, Howard.
A quick question on the Patriots. I know, you know, obviously they should have beat Tennessee in the playoffs, but they didn't. But my question was, if they had won the game against Miami and got the bye, they probably would have played Kansas City in the divisional round. Do you think the Pats would have had a chance to beat them with a week's rest?
Yeah, they would have had a chance, but I think they would have lost.
Yeah. 'Cause it would have... Sorry, that's on me. That's my fault. I
Jeez,
apologize.
Felger.
I know, right?
What's up over there? You get a quick trigger finger.
Again, for a guy that usually works like July 4th and Christmas Day, I'm way too fast on hang up in these calls.
Yeah, you're very, very quick.
Be. Yeah, that was aggressive by me. No, look, they've played Patrick Mahomes pretty tough the last few times that they've come out and done it.
Actually, that's a great point.
I think offensively, I don't know if they had enough there last year specifically to get that done. 617-779-0985 is the telephone number. Want to go now, though, to five questions.
I got five questions for Chris Gasper of Channel 5. I got five questions that got nothing to do with sports. I got five questions.
Five. One, two, three, four, five.
I got five.
All right, I really hope this segment isn't too whack. Again, not the normal person that came up with the questions. We're going to go heavy Halloween theme. But before we dive into that, got to ask you, in or out on the new Borat movie? Are you a Borat guy? Are you going
to
watch this
one? I like
one?
Borat. I'm in on it. I just have to figure out how to sign into my parents' Amazon account to watch it.
I like that move. There you go. Yeah. I know. I like the first one, too. I'll definitely check out the second one. Joe Murray was on earlier today. Not a huge fan.
Oh, really?
Of the second movie. So, yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens there. All right. In terms of Halloween, favorite candy, Chris? What is it?
Oh, favorite candy. Mounds bars.
Really?
Yeah, coconut chocolate. I love Mounds. It would either be Mounds bars, Kit Kats, or Reese's Pieces. But I'm going to go Mounds bars.
I got to be honest, I think Mounds is borderline a psychotic pick.
Really?
Yeah. I don't. I does I nothing
love,
for oh, me.
The coconut and does the chocolate. For I've me. Always loved them.
I think
when it has like the when it's been when it's kind of old and it has like the sugar's like almost dusted on it. I love that.
All right. I'm a big fan. 100 grand bar. I think is very really? Underrated.
How
yeah,
old are you? That's are you like 65? Am I talking to Dan Shaughnessy? 100 grand bar.
I always go to Shaughnessy's house for trick or treating. Get my 100 grand bar. There you go. Favorite costume you had as a kid. What
so
was it?
I actually don't really like Halloween, and I stopped really? Dressing up at like age like 11 or 12. Basically, we moved houses, and they hooked up our cable on Halloween, and I skipped trick-or-treating because Cordell Stewart in Colorado, they were playing Nebraska, and we just got our cable hooked up that day, and I was like, no, I'm watching this college football game. And my parents were like, well, okay, if you're doing that, we have to take your brother and sister out, so if you're not coming out with us, you can stay home and watch the game, but you have to pass out the candy. So I just shut off the lights out front and didn't go to the front door and watch this college football game. But to answer your question, my favorite costume, I was young. One year, I was the Joker, and my mom actually dyed my hair green, and she made the whole outfit and did the makeup. And I was the Joker from the first Batman. The Jack Nicholson Joker.
I like that. That's pretty funny. I'm also picturing like a 10-year-old Chris Gasper putting the bowl out front and turning off the lights. Yeah, that's pretty.
I was
good.
A little older than 10, but yeah.
All right. Next up, we'll go back to the candy.
Okay.
Candy corn, a fan or no?
I am a fan. I like candy corn.
See, I'm with you. I think, honestly, and I put this out on Twitter and I got roasted for it, but I think candy corn should be a year-round candy.
Oh, I agree.
I don't know why it's seasonal.
No, I like candy corn. We are in lockstep on that, McCone.
All right. Good. Finally, last question here for you. Are you a fan of horror movies or no?
I mean, not really. When I was a kid, I really like stuff like The Exorcist. You know, you'd have like a sleepover and your friends would watch the movies. And, you know, stuff like Nightmare on Elm Street. That stuff like legitimately terrified me, so I didn't like them. And when I got older and you could watch something that was maybe a little satirical, like Scream, yeah. I would like that. I thought Get Out was great. But again, that has more of a sort of social message to it. I don't like your sort of traditional, just stupid, you know, slasher horror movie. I need either some laughs in there or I need some layers.
Yeah, so I'm with you, too. I'm not a huge fan of the horror movies. Doesn't really do anything for me. Was Ted Johnson on those Colorado teams, by the way, to circle back?
You know, that's a good question. I think Teddy actually was on those teams, wasn't he? I mean, that was like back in the day. I think we're talking like Rashawn Salaam.
Those teams were loaded.
Michael Westbrook. Yeah, they were so talented back in those days. I don't know. Was Fourier on those teams or is that a little after that? They had some studs. I mean, obviously Fourier, Ted Johnson, those guys were studs and they had some really good players.
Ted Johnson, let's see.
You know?
Was
Teddy on those teams?
He was, yeah.
Do you remember? I mean, I know we're sort of just spitballing now, but I don't know if you remember. The funny thing is when the Patriots drafted Ty Law, my first thought was like, oh, that's the guy that Cordell Stewart beat on the Hail Mary. You know, and obviously, Ty had a Hall, legitimately, he's in the Hall of Fame.
Yes.
And he had an amazing career. But I remember when Parcells made that pick, my first thought was like, oh, that's the guy Michael Westbrook beat for the Hail Mary touchdown. I'm like, oh, I hope it goes better than that. And obviously it did.
It did. Yeah. It definitely did. That's pretty good. Ty Law. So were you not a fan of the Ty Law pick at the time for the
It wasn't catch? That I wasn't a fan of it, but I was just like kind of nervous. I remember being like, oh, like that was my sort of recollection of him. Yeah, was like, oh, that's the guy that Cordell Stewart beat. But that ended up being a fantastic, you know, pick. As much time as I invest in college football, I love the draft, but the reality is that it's a guessing game for everybody. It's a guessing game for the professionals who actually know how to evaluate the players. So it's a big time guessing game for me. Like to this day, I hold it against Terrell Davis that he was very average in a backfield by committee at Georgia and then was like amazing in the pros. That just bugs me, and I never liked him because of that.
No, I'm with you on that. My big thing was I was like 8, absolutely heartbroken when they took Richard Seymour over David Terrell. I was like, I don't know how you pass on David Terrell.
See?
Whoops.
Yeah, whoops.
Got that wrong. Got that wrong. That was my big miss. All right, there you go. That is 5 questions with Chris Gasper. Stole all of Tracy's questions for next week, so she's going to have to work.
Tracy's really good. She's
forward. Yeah.
So here's the thing, McCone, and I don't know where we are on time. I sort of have to question your time management here.
This is the Hoyer situation.
I feel like we have a lot of time left, but maybe I'm wrong.
Situation.
I don't know. So, you know, I'll try and dance here and fill, but I will say
manage
that,
the clock, McCone. One job. Didn't happen.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm like, we're going to 5
didn't
questions.
Happen. I like, was really excited about my questions. We have a couple minutes left.
It's like, what time are we supposed to be off?
B-Rob gave me a look like, what are you doing, dude?
was done with the questions in 3 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, that was so early. I mean, 155, is that what we're going for?
Now that's I know right. what the quarterback meeting was after Kansas City when Hoyer was in there. Like, what
yeah,
are you
I'm like,
doing?
What are we doing? Like, what's happening here?
Cohen just took a sack.
They called for the timeout. I called for the break. There's no break.
Well, this is the anti-Hoyer. Hoyer didn't leave enough time. Yeah, you're leaving too, way too
true.
Much time.
Too gun shy.
But so this the dirty little secret, you know, I'll let people in behind the scenes of Gasper and Murray. The real secret about five questions is that it's not about me and my answers. It's just a chance for Jim to vent. It's really about his answers. That's the dirty little secret of five questions. And so the whole thing is five questions for Chris Gasper of Channel 5, and we play the music. But the whole thing is really about Jim delivering these diatribes on life.
Just getting something off his chest.
And American society. It's not really about my answers. My answers are, I'm in the Felger role, people. My job on five questions is merely to facilitate.
Facilitate? Yeah,
and my answers merely facilitate.
Just set up, Jim.
Whatever diatribe. That Murray wants to go on that day. So what happens is Murray and Tracy Clements sort of talk and they come up with the questions, but the whole thing is really just a setup for whatever, you know, sort of Jeremiah do you have that day from Big Jim, who, you know, likes to, he's very funny, but he likes to go off on sort of the little things in life. And that's really what Five Questions is about. Five Questions with Chris Gasper really has nothing to do with me.
with the five
I'm
questions
just here.
For Gasper. Yeah,
I'm sort of like, you know, it's like if you watch one of these interviews and they have like, a, you know, a piece of furniture or a plant in the background. That's me. I'm like the furniture. I set the scene for Murray to do his thing. That's the dirty little secret of five questions.
That's good to know moving forward. I'm sure in like, I don't know, the way this is going in five more years when I finally fill in again with you, then I'll be ready to go with the five questions.
You did a great job, McCone. And I
appreciate
I'm trying
that.
To help you out. I got us to 154-10.
That's all we needed. Okay. I appreciate it. Who did you have quickly?
I have the Patriots. This is one of those spots, McCone, where people are, it looks bleak for the Patriots and they respond. All kidding aside, I think the practice time will help them. And I think this is a player they have intimate knowledge of in Jimmy Garoppolo. His strengths, his weaknesses, that's always advantage Belichick. And San Francisco's really banged up right now.
I'm with you. Generally, this is the spot when everyone counts him out that they do win. You know what? Generally, who's the starting quarterback when those situations took place?
That's a great point.
It's Tom Brady. It's different. I think Niners win.
Wow.
I think Niners
two
win
and four?
So there we go. Yeah, disaster.
Does 2-4 get that? What's that burning fire in the background with a dog meme
does. I'll break that out tomorrow. Yeah,
everything's
fine.
Everything's fine. And then it's like flames in the background. Yeah. So does 2-4 get us to that with the Patriots?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right. He's Chris Gasper. I'm Tim McCone. Thanks, Chris. I appreciate it. This was fun.
Great job, McCone. Right. I enjoyed it. Hope to work with you again soon.
See
you. Gasper and Murray. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
This hour with Chris Gasper is brought to you by Awaken 180 Weight Loss. Awaken 180, sample how tasty losing weight can be with the Awaken 180 approved, freshly prepared meals at all Roach Brothers and Brothers Marketplace locations. Weight loss is never bland with Awaken 180 Weight Loss.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.